Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host today in the studio is the retired State Command Sergeant Major for the Minnesota National Guard, Doug Wortham. And today, on today's show, we're going to hear from our Red Bulls currently deployed to the Middle East and talk about higher education help available for our veterans. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Camp Ripley can be a busy place during the summer. This is especially true when participants in the Minnesota National Guard youth and teen camps arrive. This one-of-a-kind kids camping experience is open to dependents, nieces, nephews, brothers, sisters, and grandchildren of current retired Minnesota Guard members. Through activities like orienteering, swimming, canoeing, and other team-building events, these volunteer-led camps help kids build confidence, have fun, and gives them a chance to spend time with kids who have a parent or parents serving. For more information on the Minnesota National Guard Youth and Teen Camps, please visit mngyc.org. That's mngyc.org.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. The 1st Combined Arms Battalion, 194th Armor Regiment, is a Minnesota Army National Guard battalion headquartered in Brainerd. The overall unit mission is to provide heavy armor and mechanized infantry ground combat power to the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team of the 34th Infantry Division. And joining me now, all the way from the Middle East, is Lieutenant Colonel Jacob Hegestad, who is commander of Task Force 1 of the 194, the Minnesota Guard. Colonel Hegestad, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, thank you very much.
Sir, we've been watching as you've trained and got prepared for this deployment. Some of your soldiers were out at the NTC, and this deployment was rumored to have been as many as 2,000 soldiers at one time, but I understand that that you and your soldiers, about 1,100 of you, are now in the Middle East and settled in and ready to go on this mission.
After we came back from the NTC, the National Training Center, last summer, there was approximately 2,000 people that were supposed to deploy. Around the middle of December, our mission changed down to approximately 1,000 people, and that's the current task force that we have now. So March 6th was the first mobilization date. And it spanned over the course of about 2 weeks, and there was nine companies, I'll say around 1,000 soldiers, all from Minnesota, from the 1st Armor Brigade. We went down to Fort Bliss, Texas, for our pre-mobilization training, where we did some gunnery, shot our tanks, our Bradleys, and did our final preparation, finally to flowing into Kuwait, and we started to come here the end of April, beginning of May, and then we officially assumed our mission May 14th as the Central Command Mobile Response Force, and we are stationed at Camp Bearing, and we've all moved in, we've settled in, and we assumed all of our different missions in May. We have people in four different countries doing a mixture of missions for Central Command, but the preponderance of everybody is stationed here at Camp Bearing as we wait as the reaction force for any situation that would need our deployment. We also have our other, I'll say, responsibility is it's a theater security cooperation, so we do regional training with our allies and partners here in the Middle East. This fall, we'll be sending a sizable contingent to Egypt to exercise or participate in an exercise called Bright Star. There'll be approximately eight other nations, 12 nations, I believe, are observers, but it is the largest exercise between the Egyptian military and the U.S. military. So that's a fairly significant event for us. It'll be unique. There's one day, a cultural day, so it'll be hopefully everybody gets to see the pyramids. And we do a lot of training with the Kuwaitis, the Saudis, and then some other regional partners, too, as we go. So we have settled in, gotten used to the weather, which is kind of a relative term. But we are ready for whatever the Army and Central Command asks of us.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Jacob Helgestad, commander of the Task Force 194 on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, I understand that you've been in the military for quite some time, and you've been deployed four times, and this isn't your first deployment to Kuwait.
That's correct. I was enlisted for about 10 years, and the last approximate 18 years, I've been a commissioned officer. I did one deployment to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, as an NCO, and then once when I returned from that, I got my commission. I deployed as a platoon leader to Kosovo in 2003-2004. Then I deployed to Iraq from 2005 to 2007. And then obviously this is my, as you said, my fourth deployment here, third to the Middle East overall, and the fourth one over my career.
Sir, as we've told our listeners, you are the battalion commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 1st Combined Arms Battalion, 194th Armor Regiment. And history shows us that the 194th Tank Battalion became the first armored force in the United States history to deploy overseas when it deployed to the Philippines to defend Manila Bay. And a few years ago, we had one of those soldiers on the show, Harold Curvers, who was there and survived the Bataan Death March. Could you give us just a little background on that, sir?
Yes. So you are correct. In the fall, in February of 1941, the 34th Armor Company, Tank Company, I should say, deployed to Fort Lewis, Fort Lewis, Washington. And then in the fall of 1941, the 194th Tank Battalion, which was commanded by Colonel Ernst Miller, deployed overseas to the Philippines prior to December 7th. And so then the 194th Tank Battalion was in the Philippines and was part of the Battle of the Philippines. The Bataan Death March, or I should say the surrender of Bataan, the Death March that is referred to as, then the prisoner of war ships as they were sent to Japan, and then finally POWs until the end of the war. There is a U.S. war correspondent, Frank Hewlett, wrote a poem. Colonel Miller, the battalion commander, his memoirs, Bataan Uncensored, nobody really spoke highly of General MacArthur, and so the war correspondent, his poem is, "We are the battling bastards of Bataan. No mama, no papa, no Uncle Sam, no aunts, no uncles, no cousins, no peace, or nieces, no pillows, no planes, no artillery pieces. Nobody gives a damn. Nobody gives a damn." And since that time, the 194 Armor, our call sign has been the Bastards, simply because of that lineage of they felt abandoned by General MacArthur. And 82 men left the Brainerd area. 64 of them went overseas to the Philippines. And of the 64, 32 survived the entire ordeal. And today, Walt Straka is the last surviving member, and he lives in Brainerd. And if I remember correctly, he should be 103 this year. So our Task 194 Armor and then Task Force Bastard is that our respect back to that history of the unit fighting in Bataan and fighting through what is arguably one of the most unprecedented modern times as far as being prisoners of war.
Yes, sir, and I understand the battalion motto is "Remember Bataan, Never Forget." Sir, we just got about 30 seconds left. Does that play well with the soldiers of today? Are they proud to be part of that unit?
Yes. I am actually wearing a "Remember Bataan, Never Forget" Task Force Bastard T-shirt, and so it is very much when you explain the entire lineage, people understand it, and then... It is each of our companies have their own physical fitness T-shirts, and the motto and the Hollywood call sign, the Bassett call sign, is used quite often, and it is a respect and a the least that we can do for the history of all the men that have came before us.
Thank you, sir. We have to take a short break. We'll be back with more with Lieutenant Colonel Jacob Helgestad, Commander of Task Force 1, the 194 on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host in the studio today is Doug Wortham, and we're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Jacob Helgestad, who is the Battalion Commander of Minnesota National Guard's 1st Combined Arms Battalion, 194th Armor Regiment, currently deployed to the Middle East as Task Force 1 of the 194, a part of Task Force Spartan. And, sir, you gave us some background about the training, and you went to Texas and got over to Kuwait in May. You're settled in now, sir. How are your soldiers doing?
Yeah, everybody is doing good. When I talk, we have about 800 or 80%, so around 800 soldiers, it's their first deployment, which means it's the first deployment for 800 families. And so every time I talk to them, you know, I ask if Kuwait, like, everybody has a cartoon bubble in their head of what it's going to be like and whether or not Kuwait matched that cartoon bubble. And I think the first month we were here was a little, I'll say, chaotic in the sense that we're doing, you know, we're assuming the mission. It's fairly fast-paced because of our responsibilities. But now that we're kind of settled in and people are into a normal day-to-day rhythm, things are good. And it was 2 weeks ago, I did, myself and my Sergeant Major, we did a Facebook Live question and answer session with the FRGs. And I believe there was around 500 people that participated, and they just posted questions. And it ran about an hour and 10 minutes of anything from what's the food like to, you know, can you make phone calls, or what's the daily, the day in the life of a soldier. And so I think everything's good. Two weeks ago, we had about a 7 or 8 day sandstorm where everything shut down. And imagine the worst blizzard you could ever have were in. But it was orange and it was sand and it didn't stop for 8 days. And so you couldn't see across the street. And we had a bunch of our tanks out on one of the shooting ranges, and we had to leave them out there. And when we finally, there was a break in the storm, we went out, we got them. There were pictures of sand dunes that were formed up that were 7, 8, 9, 10 feet tall because the winds just didn't stop. And now that the winds have subsided, summer's coming. I think Saturday it's supposed to be 122, but I was joking with my wife the other day, like when the sun goes down, it'll still be 100 degrees. Like right now it is 9:15 at night, and it's 100 degrees outside, and it'll feel chilly. So you kind of get used to everything. You get climatized. The soldiers are doing good. Half of our task force has shifted to working in the evening. Like all of our mechanics, you get more, it's easier for them to be able to work at night instead of the heat of the day. So you make adjustments for all that, and you keep moving forward.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Jacob Helgestad, Commander of Task Force 1 of the 194 on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, can you give us a little bit about the mission and the capabilities?
So we are for Task Force Spartan, or U.S. Central Command, we are the rapid response force. So we deployed with our tanks and our Bradleys, and we are the mechanized infantry or armor response force that could go anywhere in the Middle East, and we basically stand ready to do that on a moment's notice. In addition to that, we have two other missions that are security force missions, basically providing security at U.S. installations, and those are at two different locations. And then we have an element that is also conducting operations in the region. And then we also have some other people that are support, some of our support elements, our help supporting other units throughout the region. So with 1,000 people, over 1,000 people, and the capability we have, we are deliberately here for our combat capability, but we also are Swiss Army knife with our medics helping out with COVID, our surgeons, our physician assistants. So we have a lot of capability and capacity that we are currently using. But every day there's there's always a little something that we're working towards to improve not only the soldiers themselves, but also us as we stand ready for whatever happens next.
Sir, what do you hope to accomplish during your time in the Middle East?
Yeah, the first thing is that we bring everybody home. As even when we train here, I still tell everybody, like, nothing we do in training is that important for anybody to get hurt. So bringing everybody home is number one. On top of that is I've said it since the day I became an officer and even before that, is for everybody to be better than yesterday. So at the end of this, each individual person can look, and as an individual, as an organization, we were better than yesterday. And it may be granular movements, but over the course of a year, people will realize how much they've improved, the confidence they have in themselves, each other. As they trust themselves, they trust each other. Because we are here as a combat unit. So we have to be able to trust each other and be better than we were yesterday for whatever comes tomorrow.
Hey, sir. Doug Wortham here. I just wanted to jump in real quick. You know, obviously you talk about having the ability to stream and answer questions from the families back home. Having been deployed a couple of times myself as well, I understand how important it is to have a good network back home, that support. So from your perspective as the commander, how's the support been? What kind of support have you been receiving from our communities back here, not only families, but employers or even Yellow Ribbon networks?
Yeah, it's good. My wife and I joke about the technology now, where between WhatsApp or Signal or other communications, like, you can stay in touch every single day with your family, with your loved ones, versus, like, my first deployment, it was dial-up internet. It was just weird. So the technology has greatly allowed to be able to stay in touch. And then as far as, like, support, the FRGs, each of the companies, you know, they have their FRGs. They're providing, I saw Bravo 201-36 Infantry, their FRG spent this last weekend packing care packages and sending them forward. So between the FRG supporting and then the Yellow Ribbon, as we were talking earlier, we got, I think it was 1,200 bags of our own coffee blend, the Bastard Blend. We've gotten, I don't know how many cases of Girl Scout cookies. So it has been phenomenal. And it actually, all of our chaplain here has his own building. And so all of this stuff that we get, he organizes it. And so it allows soldiers, it's all there for them. And so across the entire formation, it is one of those things where it's very humbling, because you get so much stuff, and everybody takes care of us more than words could actually describe.
And so you would say that you've gotten obviously great support. Is there anything that you guys are lacking, your soldiers?
No, not that I'm trying to think. Nothing that they would joke about, but all of, like, toiletry items and snack food, and I mean, from coffee, there is more. It is all being used, but I haven't heard anything up through to me of, like, hey, these are things that we would like to ask for at this point. And I'm trying to think of anything that's, like, super unique that always gets used. I mean, you know, obviously toothbrush, toothpaste, razors, all that, that gets used all the time. Cookies don't last. I got a thing of Oreos, and I think it lasted one meeting, and it was gone in like 30 seconds. So there's those little things from home that surprisingly go fairly quickly.
Colonel, we're out of time. I'd like to thank you for staying up late and telling us how you and your troops are doing in Kuwait, and want to wish you a good mission, and thanks for joining us today.
Yep, thank you.
That was Lieutenant Colonel Jacob Helgstad, commander of the Task Force 1 of the 194. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about higher education help available for our veterans. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host today is the retired State Command Sergeant Major for the Minnesota National Guard, Doug Wortham. And in a moment, we're going to talk about higher education help available for our veterans. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
As we near the 4th of July, I'm reminded of the 24-note bugle call, also known as TAPS. Our current version was likely created during the Civil War by Union General Daniel Adams Butterfield. He decided the French lights-out music was too formal for the daily end-of-day signal. He hummed a version to an aide, who transcribed it to music. General Butterfield then directed the brigade bugler, Oliver Norton, to play the notes, and he made further adjustments to the length of each note. This new call was then played at the end of each day, instead of the regulation call. Word spread, and other buglers adopted the same call. It was even adopted by Confederate buglers. This music was made the official Army bugle call shortly after the war ended, but was not given the name TAPS until 1874. TAPS Out is now played at all military burial and memorial services to accompany the lowering of the flag and to symbolize Lights Out command at day's end.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Doug, we've got a special guest in the studio today, and we're going to learn some things about higher education for our veterans. Would you like to introduce him?
Yes, absolutely. Joining me now is Ed Goffrey. Ed works for the State Approving Agency for Veterans Education Benefits with Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and is also an administrator for the Minnesota GI Bill. He's worked for the agency for 5 years. And he's also currently the vice chair of the OJT Apprenticeship Committee for the National Association of State Approving Agencies. Ed, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And what we like to do, we have guests in this studio, like to get a little bit of background. So I understand that you served. Can you tell us a little bit about your time in the military?
For sure. I was in the Army Reserve. I spent 8.5 years on an 8-year contract. I got deployed to Germany in support of Operation Joint Guardian in 99-2000. All the active duty MPs went to Bosnia-Kosovo, so they got the reserve to backfill. Then I went to Iraq in 2003-2004 for 51 weeks.
51 weeks. Well, thank you for your service. I also started off in the Military Police Corps as well, the old 257th right here in the Minnesota National Guard. But let's get down to some business here. We talked about, or in your title, of all the things that you do, this state approving agency. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What does that mean?
For sure. The long and short of it is state approving agency is a federal contract to approve the GI Bill within the boundaries of your state. So every state has their own state approving agency. The general idea is that federal regulations have us looking at some of the more nuanced aspects of state oversight. So we work with Office of Higher Education, Department of Labor and Industry, and even like the Minnesota Board of Cosmetology to make sure that all of the training they offer meets federal regulations.
Okay. And so the GI Bill is one of the topics that we need to talk about here. And I think often there's some confusion about there's a federal GI Bill, there's a state GI Bill. I've used both, but I don't know if I'm eligible for both at the same time. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about maybe what those differences are and then, you know, exactly what you key in on the Minnesota state side.
For sure. The federal GI Bill is available for all veterans to, you know, to attend college or pursue job training. I mean, there's no limitation. It's much more broad. But the Minnesota GI Bill is funded by the state of Minnesota's taxpayers. It's for Minnesota veterans or residents of the states and are training or pursuing education in Minnesota. So
Okay, so Minnesota veteran currently residing in the state of Minnesota.
Correct.
Can receive that. Okay.
For example, I got a call last week of a guy who was living in Duluth and was working in Superior, Wisconsin. And I said, nope, you're not gonna fly.
Right. And so in that specifically within the OJT stuff, which we mm-hmm. want to talk about,
yeah.
For the educational part of it, when I went and got my master's degree, for example, mm-hmm. I was able to tap into the Minnesota GI Bill to pay for a portion of that. All right.
Yeah, so it's the OJT apprenticeship side works a little differently. That you in the higher ed side, you're eligible for $3,000 for tuition assistance each fiscal year, but on the OJT apprenticeship side, if you're in approved job training, it'll pay you $1,000 for each 6 months of training. So if you've got like an electrical apprenticeship, you've got for 4 years, you're going to get $8,000. If it's a six-month program, you get $1,000.
So let's dive into that a little bit more when we talk about on-the-job training. Has that always been something that's been available to be paid?
Yeah, for sure. It's as old as the GI Bill itself. It hit the books in 1944. But I think so much of military advertising is all about money for college. Like we've all seen the commercials, be all you can be, get money for college. But the whole, assistance with job training just hasn't had that kind of visibility. And it's, I think, one of the most frustrating parts of my job is just getting that information out there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I remember when I signed up, that's exactly what it was. It was the GI Bill to pay for my college education. There was mm-hmm. never even a thought about paying for some type of OJT,
right.
Which I think that's an important thing that we communicate to the listening audience.
Absolutely.
That OJT is something that can be covered. Now, is there a specific things that can't be covered?
Well, the basic criteria is you have to, if you're interested in applying, the business has to have at least 6 months of structured training. And by structured training, I mean you can't just say, go follow Doug around until he gives you a thumbs up. It's like it needs to be a little more granular than that. You need to have a veteran in training. There's some regulations about what pay needs to be.
We're speaking with Ed Godfrey from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs about the Minnesota GI Bill on Minnesota Military Radio. Ed, I want to get right to it. Trades. All people talk about is going to college.
For sure.
The trades are a good place to make a living and a good career now.
Absolutely.
And you can help them with the apprenticeship program.
Right. And that kind of gets into the spirit of what the GI Bill's for when it comes to job training. The idea is that I like to imagine the scenario. You've got your E6 with a family coming out of active duty, wrapping up an 8-year career, and now they want to get into the trades. So they start as an apprentice, but now they're not, they're at the bottom of the wage scale. And it's going to take them, 4 years to get up to that journey worker rate. So the GI Bill is there to kind of fill the gap between what they need to provide for their family and what they can anticipate making in a decent paying job like that.
So as Tom said, trades, absolutely something that that we need to promote, and it's great that we're talking about it right now. So the OJT, our apprenticeship program, and is something that can be covered. And this is covered by who? Who is paying for this at this point now? This is the federal program is actually paying for it. This is the state of Minnesota now saying, we're going to pay you to get to be an apprentice.
Absolutely. It's both. You can, if you're eligible, you can draw from both programs at the same time. So you can get your federal benefit, which normally comes in the form of a basic housing allowance for E5 with dependents. For example, at this 55416, I just looked it up. It's $1,734 a month. That's in addition to your apprentice rate. And that's, it comes down to about 10 bucks an hour. And if you kind of think of the scenario of someone, an apprentice making 20 who's looking to, make 30, that's, that makes up the difference. Then it gets prorated every 6 months where the need becomes less and less.
Ed, I just want to follow up. When we're talking about the trades, we're talking about electricians, plumbers, carpenters, all the trades are just begging for help, and they can't find any help.
Right, and I really think of this as a great recruiting incentive too. Like if you can get your program approved for, you know, for VA benefits, what a great way to lure in some military talent.
Yeah, that's a great deal, and we want to talk about actually some of the benefits that the employers can receive by following through with this apprenticeship program inside of their businesses. But before we do that, we do have to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll continue to speak with Ed Godfrey from the Minnesota State Approving Agency. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Doug Wortham, co-hosting with Tom Lyons. And today we're speaking with Ed Godfrey from the Minnesota State Approving Agency. So, Ed, before we went to break, you're given a lot of information about the educational benefits, specifically OGT and apprenticeship. So can you just give a quick recap again about the benefits that are available to our veterans?
For sure. I mean, just a quick rundown. Like the federal side gives them a $1,000 equipment allowance for, you know, a pair of boots and tools. The basic housing allowance for each month, it gets prorated every 6 months. And the Minnesota GI Bill will pay them $1,000 for each 6 months of training. That's the long and short of it.
Yeah, that's perfect. And I understand that there's incentives for employers to actually seek out our veterans to have them come and work for them and go through these apprenticeship programs. So can you explain a little bit about how that works?
For sure. Part of the Minnesota GI Bill is that it incentivizes employers to hire veterans, and they will pay an employer $2,000 to hire a veteran. That's $1,000 just to hire them, and then they'll check back in a year to see if they're being retained, and they get a second $1,000. And that's not a lot of money in the grand scheme of running a business, but like so there's some of our, you know, trade JTCs that have 25 veterans in them, and that adds up.
And is that amount, that $2,000, is for every veteran,
yes,
that they hire, that they put through,
right,
the apprenticeship program, OJT program?
Correct.
And is there any type of limit on the business size?
Absolutely not. We've done really small shops with three people in them, and we've done, you know, multinational businesses. As long as they're operating in Minnesota, and like I said, as long as you got those 6 months of structured training, like, you're welcome to apply.
So the key is Minnesota, our business operating in Minnesota, a Minnesota veteran that resides in Minnesota.
Correct.
Or a veteran that resides in Minnesota, mm-hmm, sign up for the apprenticeship program. Their employer is incentivized for doing that. And then, of course, the veteran is going to receive the pay that goes along as they go through that training program.
Exactly.
And what were those dollar amounts again?
It's like the basic housing allowance is outstate Minnesota, it's about $1,100 a month. In the Twin Cities area, it's $1,700. And then it's $1,000 for each 6 months with the Minnesota GI Bill.
So if you're a veteran of the military and you want to go into the trades, there's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't check into the program and get signed up, and of course, the employer as well. Which leads to the next question then. How is it that I, as a veteran or a business, how do I get signed up for it? How does a business have to go through the process to get signed up?
It's contact your state approving agency, and that would be me. You can get in touch with me. 1-888-LINK-VET would be the easiest way to do it. Also, the MDVA website can direct you towards me, but I look forward to working with you.
And is it a pretty long process? How do I prove my veteran status? What does an employer have to do to be eligible and prove that they're eligible to provide the program?
Sure. For the employer side, it's just demonstrating that you have regimented training. And that's like that structured training is one of the big approval criteria, is that the veteran knows what kind of training they get. Like if they're shopping around for a job, they should be able to look at your training program and say, these are the skills I wish to cultivate.
And once again, if you want more information about the GI Bill and job training, go to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs website or dial 1-888-LINK-VET, and they can put you in touch with Ed Godfrey or some of the other good people at the MDVA. And Ed, before we're done with you, can you just explain one more time, what's the difference between the federal and the state GI Bill?
It's where the funding comes from. The federal GI Bill is funded by the national level taxpayers, and the state GI Bill is the state level.
And Ed, we just got about a minute left. What's the real message you want to get to our veterans and families of veterans all over Minnesota? There's help available.
Absolutely. And it's like the GI Bill is about transition assistance. It's helping the veteran get from their military career into the civilian career. And we've all heard the money for college part, but this whole job training to keep you at that standard that you're used to, we just need to spread that message more.
You know, speaking from personal experience, it was extremely easy. I use mine for the college side of it, but it was extremely easy for me to go on, apply, and get approval pretty darn quick. And it was just a great process and a very easy process. So there is, again, no reason for our veterans not to take advantage of something that's provided them for their service, to thank them for their service. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, hey, thank you so much for joining us today. We do appreciate all the information that you've provided. This was Ed Godfrey with the Minnesota State Approving Agency. And Ed, have a great day.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Joining me now is Greg Peterson, the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and the Brown County Veteran Service Officer. Greg, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, Tom, it's good to be back on the radio this month.
Greg, we're here in June, and it feels like July, and things are hot.
Oh, my gosh.
How are your veterans doing down in Brown County? Are they staying cool?
Yeah, they're hanging in there. They're either inside with the air conditioning or, you know, I see them outside walking after hours. There's ways to cool down.
Greg, I understand we want to talk today about something called pension poaching, but before we get to that, can you explain what is the VA pension program?
Yeah, that's a real good question. You know that I'm retired from the military and I get a pension. It's not the same thing that I wanted to talk about. The VA pension program is for wartime soldiers or wartime veterans or their widows. And the VA will pay them a stipend if they are in assisted living or nursing homes. It helps them continue to live under their own funding longer than they would if they had to go to the government for assistance.
So, Greg, as our veterans get older, are they getting the same kind of are they targets for spam and poaching?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's we call it pension poaching, or that's what the VA actually calls it. The greatest or the highest paid pension rate, there's two different rates. Actually, there's three, but there's a housebound rate, you know, if you can't leave your home, and then there's one called aid and attendance, and that means you need someone else's aid and attendance to help you throughout the day, whether it's bathing or dressing or going to the bathroom or managing your money and things like that. And that term, aid and attendance, seems to stick in people's minds, and I Google searched it this morning, and right away, there were three or four hits from companies that want to help veterans obtain their entitlement, their benefit of pension with aid and attendance.
Now, that can't be the best place for our veterans to go. Shouldn't they go to the county veteran service officers and get that help for free?
Yeah, absolutely, because, for example, on this website, I've got it pulled up right now, there's a two or three different places that says, see if you qualify. Send us your email address. Send us your phone number, the state you're in, and we'll help you figure out if you pre-qualify. And then it goes on to say, you know, for a small fee, we can get all the paperwork done for you, and then at no charge, submitting of the application. Well, the reason they say at no charge is because they're prohibited by law from charging someone for filing claims with the VA. That is free of charge. You don't have to pay for that. It's like you don't have to pay to get your DD-214 out of the National Archives, although there are companies that will do that.
Now, Greg, I imagine some of our veterans go down to the local Legion Post or the VFW Club and sit there and say, God, I need some help. I don't know how I can get this. And they might not be getting the best help there.
They might not. A lot of guys are probably thinking if they've had help or they're getting BA disability or something like that, compensation, they're only thinking about themselves and their own specific circumstances. Everybody should always point, go to your county veteran service officer or go to the federal building where our big veterans organizations are housed, the American Legion, the DAV, the VFW, the Purple Heart. The professional employees of those organizations will help you attain your benefits.
Because CVSOs and those professionals at the Hubbard make it their business to know what the rules are and how to help the veterans.
That's right, and we do it for free. This is our job. We are paid for by taxpayer dollars, and we do all of these things for free. As a matter of fact, we're talking from my office right now. I have a lady sitting across my desk, and we are working on pension for her mother. We are doing a real good job for her mom, and she's got a smile on her face.
Well, we're going to let you get back to her because we're out of time. Thanks for joining us today, Greg.
All right, Tom. I appreciate it.
This is Greg Peterson, the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Lieutenant Colonel Jacob Helgestad, Ed Godfrey, Greg Peterson from the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, my co-host, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week for a July 4th special where we take on an in-depth look at our sacrifices made by our families and employers when one of our hometown heroes deploy. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.